Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Swing, high fly ball, built to right center, and the Braves have won it!
There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
A walk-off homer from Freeman, and the Braves win it!
He is safe! Braves win!
Fair ball, it's a walk-off! Acuna sends us home with a 5-4 victory!
Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of Behind the Braves, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. We're coming to you live. Well, not live by the time you're hearing it because this is pre-recorded. But, hey, we're live right now as far as us here in person in the 1957 conference room in the offices at Truist Park. I'm Ricky Mast, Atlanta Braves digital media content manager, sitting here at the table with my buddy and co-pilot, director of Braves alumni relations, Greg McMichael. And, Greg, we got a recurring guest on with us today, good buddy of ours, guy that I basically love to give a hard time to every day, and he loves to give it back, Mark Bowman from MLB.com. Of course, you see his articles every day on Braves.com, and you follow him on Twitter at MLB Bowman. And we're just, fancy this, for the Braves podcast, we're just talking baseball today with Bo. So it's always good to have him on, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we get some insights into the team. And, of course, you know, he eats, sleeps, and breathes Braves baseball, and he's talking to Snit. You know, we don't have access to go down there like he does and on the Zoom calls, I guess they do now, but it's great to hear his perspective on what's going on. And then he, you know, he remembers way back all the team stuff from back in 2000s and comparing teams and all that good stuff. So I like talking with Bo, and it's great to be able to have him on each week.
Yeah,
or each month.
Yeah, he's been the Braves beat writer for MLB.com since 2001, but he's been with the Braves. He was actually, if you go way back to the first time we had him on Behind the Braves a couple years ago, he talked about how his first job in baseball was as a trainee with the Braves in 96.
So corporate partners, or was he in ticket sales?
I think at first he was like customer service and then corporate partners. So going back, his first job down here with the Braves was at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium.
Nice.
So he's seen a lot with the Braves in various roles, but for the most part as a beat writer for the last 20 years. Actually, I meant to bring this up with him while he was here. He and I were just talking about this the other day. Of course, it's pretty incredible. My hat's off to the game entertainment folks here with the Braves. Last weekend, the 20th anniversary of September 11th, 2001, the pregame ceremony that they had here was just outstanding. Mm-hmm. If you were here, then you know what I'm talking about, but it was really, really amazing. And so it got me to thinking, you know, I've known Bo all these years now, but I'd never asked him this question. I was like, well, he's covered the team since 2001. And of course, the Braves and Mets played the infamous first professional sporting event in New York after 9/11, which the Mets went on to win, which you've heard guys like Chipper and others say, you know, it's the one game in their career that didn't mind. They're okay losing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, were you there at that game? He goes, yeah, I was there. And that was my first ever road trip on the job.
Wow.
And he's like, yeah, he said, yeah, he and the other beat writers at the time, I think, were on the team charter. They had a 3-game series in Philly before that. And then they took the train from Philly to New York. And I said, what was that like that night? And he just said, basically unlike anything else ever, which that had to have been
pretty
amazing.
Yeah.
So at some point on, Bo is going to be a regular on here, so we'll have to ask him about that.
Yeah, but I will say this. I want to give a shout-out to Gaylord Perry.
Yep.
It's his birthday today.
Yep.
So I had a few guys put some messages together, some video messages. We sent it to him. He's recovering from COVID, and then, you know, he wasn't able to make it to Cooperstown this year, but he's obviously one of our alumni that are in the MLB Hall of Fame. So great guy, and just wish him well on his birthday. birthday and speedy recovery. So a little shout out to Gaylord.
I think he's what, 83 today, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
There's if I'm not mistaken, I swear, I think that it was Gaylord Perry. It's a video. I remember seeing it as a kid, and it was like, all right, I'm going to date myself a little bit here, but this was an old VHS tape, and it was like the not so great moments of sports hosted by Tim McCarver. And I think it was on that tape. There was one little section where it was Gaylord Perry just explaining all of the different ways that he would lather up the ball and how he would do
ball. That's right. Ball. It was legal back then.
Yeah, just going right down the line, just talking every bit about every single little trick he had in his book. And I was so fascinated by that as a kid. I'm like, wow, he does all that to the baseball. Yeah. That's amazing. So that's cool that we have him as part of our Braves alumni here.
Yep.
Hall of Famer and all-time great. Also, Rick Kranitz's birthday today.
Very
Braves
nice.
Braves pitching coach.
So yeah.
Big day for Braves birthdays today.
Love it.
And yesterday was Mark Bowman's birthday. So
man, they're all the good ones are grouped together.
They're all the Hall of Famers are all grouped together here in mid-September. And my mom was 2 days ago, so there you go. All the greats.
All right.
All the greats. All right, well, without further ado, let's get into it here. Really fun discussion with our pal, Mark Bowman. Well, Bo, no sense in beating around the bush here. Let's dive right in. I love Maryland laying 7.5 against Illinois this weekend.
That's great. That's great. Who'd UMBC have this week?
I don't know.
Go ahead. I'll let you finish your Maryland laying 7.5.
No. I was drawing a blank because I was looking up the number of national championships won by University of Dayton. The air you heard reading all of them. So,
Starting it off.
For those of you listening out there, this is the kind of thing that goes on every single day in the press box. Bowman gives me a hard time about UMBC beating Virginia, which, by the way, was the start of Virginia's national championship run. No big deal. And then I remind him that we're still waiting on Dayton to play in March Madness of 2020. So,
I thought it was football season.
It is. And you know, we're on the same team this week.
This is
Virginia Tech Hate Week.
That's true.
So,
Bo is a big West Virginia football fan too, so we are on the same page.
They looked good the first week. What happened last week?
Well, actually, they looked good last week. With the West Virginia did not look. They could beat by Maryland the first week. That's where he went with the whole Maryland.
I swear to God, I did. First of all, let me preface this.
That was a close game.
This is for entertainment purposes only. I looked up the lines and saw that, and I was like, I don't think Illinois is very good this year. So that was a coincidence.
Well, that's a happy coincidence. And then they played Long Island. I guess they said university, but it did look more like a high school team. It was
the Ducks.
It was the worst team I think to ever visit.
Long Island Ducks?
The Long Island Ducks.
Yeah. I think Rocker was their quarterback.
All right. There you go. Well, Mark Bowman, first of all, happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
Oh, you hid that from all of us for a long time, and then I don't know how Kevin McAlpin, somebody's discovered it within the last couple of years. So we now know it. It's on all of our calendars.
Yeah, you don't like celebrating birthdays?
I mean, it is fine. We all know Kevin's. Kevin's is a good joke because the thing is, you say, remind people that Kevin gets excited every year because he finds out that his birthday once again fell on Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, my birthday same day as Cinco de Mayo again.
Well, I guess we'll talk a little Braves here since we're all here.
Let's do it.
All right. So we're not, I don't like, while I don't believe in jinxes, at the same time, I don't like talking about postseason stuff before we've actually clinched a postseason berth. But in the interest of discussion here, I think I do want to talk a little bit about postseason and where we're headed. Want to talk about your thoughts on rotation, lineup, all that kind of stuff. Before we get into the specifics, I am curious. This season it's unlike any other that I've experienced. How would you characterize this season? It's been kind of a bizarre season in a lot of ways.
It's certainly unlike any I remember. I mean, you think about 2004, you were still, even when they struggled at the beginning, you were still expecting it to happen eventually just because it had happened, 11, 12 times before that. And it was still pretty good. This team, the biggest difference with this team is it has been rebuilt a couple times here throughout the season. You know, you try to account for Travis d'Arnaud's injury, and that was a big, for him to be out for 3+ months, that was a big loss.
Sure.
And then obviously you lose, you had planned on Soroka throughout the year, so you're trying to mix and match in that rotation, and then all of a sudden with the Acuña injury, Alex deserves, you know, I know I'm underselling it by saying he deserves a lot of credit, but it's really remarkable what he did.
Well, you're not even mentioning Ozuna.
Ozuna. You lost Ozuna. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know,
that guy was your RBI leader last year. What Duvall's doing this year, Ozuna did last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was your four hole hitter. I mean, my gosh, yeah. I mean, Alex, I guess people are talking about it, but I mean, he's done just an amazing job, and I don't think he's gotten enough credit. I mean, if he's not executive of the year, I don't know what in the world who's going to beat him out.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the one thing you got to really give him credit is it's like he's been fighting. From the word go on this season, and even this past winter, I think he would have loved to have avoided re-signing Ozuna, and he ended up going with it. And then all of a sudden, you deal with that. So it's a challenging winter. You're thinking about the bullpen, and he's trying to put these pieces together. And he did a good job to get Charlie. And at the end of the day, maybe Drew Smyly got overpaid, but at the same time, they won a lot of games with Drew pitching or starting here during the middle months. But just to see what Alex did. Okay, let's just look at the returns. Okay, you got Adam Duvall, Eddie Rosario, Jorge Soler, and Jock Peterson. And Rich Rodriguez. What are you going to regret giving up? There's not a single piece that you're going to regret giving up.
What did you give up? I mean, it was like one of those Kerry Leitenberg for, a dozen baseballs kind of deal, right?
Exactly. Look, we've all seen plenty of Bryce Wilson. Good luck. Go on.
Yeah. He needed to go somewhere else.
He needed to go somewhere else.
There's probably a couple other guys that need to go somewhere else, too, that need a fresh start. But you gave up a guy to do that.
Yeah, I mean that's basically the name that, and I cannot believe it. Seriously, I just said this on 680. The Braves got Adam Duvall for Alex Jackson. Mm-hmm. Seriously,
they sure did.
I want to give him truth serum, and I want to say, tell me how that conversation went. I want Adam Duvall. Okay, well, who do you want? And, okay, well, we'll take Alex Jackson. Well, what? Or how do you sell Alex Jackson? And he got Adam Duvall for that.
Well, unless the Marlins just didn't want to pay the rest of the year's contract, which could have been a very real situation, right?
Exactly. But, I mean,
it wasn't a whole lot, but, I mean, still the fact that they're trying to save money anywhere they can, and Alex wasn't getting paid anything. So.
But
then Soler, I mean, of course, he's basically riding the bench and batting .212 and or .205 or whatever he was, and who did we give up for him?
Casey Kalich, which is a minor league pitcher. I think he may be underwent Tommy John surgery this year.
Crazy.
That's what I kept thinking. That's what part of what's made this whole thing so bizarre is that you've seen teams buy and sell at the deadline before, and it's usually let's go back to Alex's last couple of deadlines, not counting 2020, because that was just kind of a weird deal altogether. 2018, there was a clear need for a starting pitcher, went and got Gausman. 2019, clearly needed to bullpen help, went and got three guys at the deadline. Yeah.
And that was amazing, too.
I remember thinking that he would have a hard time however long his career lasts here, which I hope it lasts for a long time, but I thought that he's going to have a hard time ever topping that deadline. Mm-hmm. So it's always, to me, it seems like to me, buying teams, it's usually there's one area of need, specific need, that they really focus in on. He essentially rebuilt kind of an entire team minus the rotation. I mean, he got one bullpen arm, but it's a pretty crucial arm, at least up to this point. But really rebuilt an entire lineup at the deadline. And that's, at least just for me watching Braves teams over the year, I don't think I've ever seen that before. I mean, you went from, no disrespect to the guys that were starting every day up until the deadline, but you had a lot of guys that were starting every day that are much better as bench pieces. Mm-hmm. And he essentially rebuilt that lineup. And that's just, I keep calling it bizarre, but it is. He does deserve a lot of credit for that. It's pretty incredible what he did. I mean, can you think of a trade deadline you've seen? And it can be non-Braves where somebody has rebuilt a team like that at the trade deadline?
Well, I mean, nothing just comes, to mind right now. Because, I mean, like you said, he built a bullpen 2 years ago and built an outfield, or rebuilt an outfield here this year. It's remarkable. His trade deadline success, I mean, he's got to be in line to for it to be called Alex Anthopoulos Day on July 30th or 31st. I mean, he's done that well. And, you know, it truly, starting there with Gossman, you know, that was just a big deal that Gossman was good for five or six starts, and that's really all they needed. That won them the division, and that helps create an attitude, you know, and like you said, 2019, he rebuilds the bullpen, and 2020, you know, you go out and get Tommy Malone. Oh, sorry.
Oh,
no.
Oh, man. Oh, you had to get one.
Hey, look, no. But, I mean, what he did this year is just really incredible.
Yeah. So. Well, I thought it would have been hard to top what he did with the bullpen, which was flat out incredible to be able to get that many quality arms last year, and then to be able to do what he did this year. Now, of course, we can all admit that he could have gotten those guys, and if they would have come here and underperformed, we wouldn't be talking about it. So he did his part. Yeah. He gave them a new opportunity. We all know what a fresh breath can be for a player that's struggling, and new scenery, and on a team. You go from the Royals, who are not doing very well. You go from the Pirates, that are not doing very well. You go from the Cubs, that are not doing very well. So all these guys came from places. You know, Rosario was on the DL with the Indians, and then... And so you do that, and all of a sudden these guys, of course, they did have a track record in the past. They were really good players. They just weren't in a good situation. Yeah. But they could have come here and continued the bad situation that they were in, but they all turned it around. So that's an amazing thing to fit right into this team. And so they make Alex look like a genius, right? Yeah. So it works both. I mean, you know, Bobby Cox wants us to look good. You know, we want to make Bobby look good. You know, so that's the way it works, and why everybody becomes successful when you make someone who makes moves look really, really good. So, yeah. I mean, Adam should be playing his way into a nice little contract, hopefully from us, for a multi-year extension. Yeah. But who knows? I mean, these guys, no matter where they go, they've just upped their stock big time. And which is great. Even though the numbers won't eventually look great, but if you just look at the numbers from when they've been here, they've just done a great job. And you know, I think there's multiple facets to that. Obviously, good team, great place to play, kind of a vote of confidence that you traded for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all those things work together. I mean, the athlete's psyche is very, you know, it's very sensitive at times, especially when we're talking about hitters, right? And so, you know, you just never know when that situation. And that's why I've always said, guys like, whether it's Foltynewicz or whether it was Mike Minor or whether it's, you know, what just happened with Bryce getting traded, or I think personally with Tukey, and I think with Newcomb. I think sometimes these guys, they come up into the system, they play, they're up and down, up and down, up and down. They need to go somewhere else, and they need a different perspective. They need a fresh place to be. Who knows? They need a different influence, and they may be good. They may not. We don't know, but sometimes you just get to the point where you got to, you know, you got to go somewhere, and you hope. And that happened with Jason Schmidt. You remember him?
Yeah.
He ended up being an all-star. Sure. He just, for whatever reason, didn't fit here with Leo, with Maddox, Glavin, those guys. It was just a tough situation. Goes to Pittsburgh, kind of spreads his wings, and goes on to the Giants and has an unbelievable career, all-star, and the rest is history. So that just happens in baseball. And so I'm not surprised by it, but for what we had to give up for those guys, I'm amazed that he was able to pull those strings and get the players, and then to see what happened. Yeah. It's a great story.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you think about, you know, even when they got to Soler, you've got a question. You go, can he play right field? You take a little bit of a gamble, and he's been serviceable out there. And then, you know, okay, if we put him in the two hole, is he going to see some more fastballs sitting in front of Freddie Freeman? It's been a slight uptick in that he has seen more fastballs, but more importantly, when pitchers have had to be a little bit more aggressive against him, he hasn't missed. You know, whether that's the fastball or even the breaking ball. And that two hole hitting in front of Freddie Freeman has helped Soler.
And seeing him go to right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Because that's not easy to do. A guy hits 38 home runs, pull hitter, and all of a sudden he learns to start hitting the ball the other way. That's scary.
You know, these guys are, except Soler hit 48 homers a couple years ago.
48,
And
I want to short him 10.
And then, okay, so this year's team, it was going to be a pretty special, well, offense anyhow, possibly, because you've got four infielders who are going to hit 30. Well, we need Dansby to pick it up a little bit here. 20, he's at 26. So you got, okay, so they'll, and then you would have had Acuna would have hit 30. So there's only one team in history that's had five players hit 30 homers in one season. It was the 2019 Twins. One of those guys being Eddie Rosario. Hit 33 that year, and he's batting eighth in this lineup.
Yeah.
And not even necessarily bat, play, you know, wasn't playing every day there, you know, until recently or, you know.
Well, this organization had four guys had 30 home runs, right? That was back when Sarge. What? No, no, I'm talking about way back in, in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like Gary Matthews, had Bob Horner, Dale Murphy, and who was the fourth?
You know what I'm thinking of was
was what's 80, 81, 82? One of those years.
That up.
You know, early 80s, they had four of them hit 30 home runs.
You know what they did have? They had three guys hit 40 one year. In 73, I think. Oh. Hank?
Daryl, right? Daryl Evans?
Daryl Evans.
Rico?
And Davey Johnson.
That's right.
Johnson. That's right. Yeah. Three guys hit 40.
I might be wrong. Maybe that's what I was thinking about. But yeah. I know that because we've got a picture of those guys in here, all four of them upstairs. I think they all four hit 30. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, 40 home runs back then was...
I would argue still is now.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Post-steroid era.
I still remember being, you know, I was born in 1974, and I think I had a baseball card there in 78 or 79 with George Foster's picture on it with 48 or 49 homers, whatever it was. And that was just a huge number.
Yeah.
Big number.
It is. There are still nights when I look up at here at the Truist Park, I look up at Braves Vision, and, you know, they'll have the Braves lineup up there, and they list stats, and they've got everybody's home runs listed. And I still look at our numbers now, and I look at just double digits going all the way down the line, and I'm like, you know, we're not that far removed from the vaunted 2015, 2016 Braves that they couldn't hit a home run outside of Freddie. You know, nobody could hit a home run to save their lives. So it's not lost on me how great that is. Look up,
Ricky. We're only 2 months removed from after Freddie batted. I would just walk around for a little bit, wait for him for the top of the lineup to come back up.
You're not wrong.
That was just a couple weeks ago.
You're not wrong. Well, since we're talking a lot about the new guys, I am curious. We'll get into postseason and rotation and stuff in a little bit, but I am curious. Alex brings in all these new guys: Jock, Soler, Duvall, and Rosario, and Rich Rod as well. But talking about the hitters, jumping ahead a little bit. How many of those guys do you see back here next year? And that's a loaded question because who knows how it plays. So I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just projecting a little bit here. What do you think?
All right. Well, let's just go ahead and look at it. So who's your opening day outfield right now? Say Acuna doesn't come back. Let's just say mid-May.
I think that's a safe. I mean, who knows? But we can't count on him being there in April. I don't think.
Yeah.
So he's not April.
Yeah.
Let's just say there. So I think the easy. The no brainer to me is you take care of Duvall's $7 million bonus.
All right, for those
not
who
bonus, I'm sorry.
The option is that just for those who don't know, that's a mutual option. They both sides have to pick that up.
Yeah. If you got to talk different contract, anyhow, I still think he makes a lot of sense.
I do too. To
come back. I think he's one of those players that's smart enough to know that sometimes there's a best fit for you.
Yeah, sure.
And I think it's here. Yeah. And so let's look at him. And like, so you got Acuna. I think that Peterson's $10 million option's a little bit pricey for me, but you know, he can play a couple different spots for you, play across the outfield, and you know, he's been really good in the clubhouse. And I'm fine with Rosario or Soler. I'm not saying all four of them will come back, but I could see two to three of them coming back. I mean, because the only other guy, unfortunately, Pache and Rick and Drew Waters have not given you any confidence that they're going to be ready next year.
Yeah, right. And especially, you know, we were hoping Pache was ready starting this year, and it hasn't worked out that way. And you can't go into next year.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I think, too. I feel like Duvall. If you made me choose or a pecking order, I think I'd bring him back just because he's proven what he can do here. Yeah. Okay, well, let's get into the rotation a little bit because you just wrote about this on Braves.com late last night or this morning or both, however you want to look at it. There you go. How do you look at the fifth spot in the rotation for right now as we're getting through the rest of the season? How do you see that shaping up?
Well, I mean, you know, you certainly don't want to undersell the value of that fifth spot in the rotation here at the end. That turn's going to come up three more times, one being Sunday in San Fran, first Friday there in San Diego, and then you can use it wherever you want during that final week. You hope that you've cleansed or you're in a position where you can use it however best suits you during that final homestand. But there are going to be three times that you're going to have to use a fifth starter down the stretch. My thinking on Tukey is he's had his chances here, and I thought he was really good at the end of July. He was pretty good throughout August, and unfortunately, he's not pitching well. So I've got to, instead of doubling down or tripling down on Tukey, I'm going to go to Drew Smyly, and I'm going to say his velocity dropped a lot in August. And if he's only pitched 2 months in September, if I can get him back up to 92 miles an hour, you know, maybe I can get him through five innings in San Francisco, a place he pitched last year. He's 18 innings there last year, I think, you know, but that's the mound that he was pitching on and he's familiar with. He's a veteran. I just feel more confident putting him on the mound than I do Tukey at this point in time. Mm-hmm. Or what's wrong with just thinking this is a piggyback? One of you goes three or four innings and you're not going to see the fifth. Yeah. You know, like last night, if Tukey doesn't see the fifth, if Drew pitches that inning, maybe the Braves win that game. I don't know. We don't know, but I'd rather not send him through the lineup.
Yeah, you know, each one does you know, two at bats per player. Did you ask Snit if you know, why they thought his velocity dropped? I mean, did he get tired or?
I think so. I think it was a short season last year. Just, you know, but I mean, that's unfortunately, you took the gamble on the contract by saying, hey, he's throwing 94. Well, he's only thrown, you know.
Right.
He only threw five innings twice last year.
And where's Mueller? Why isn't he in the mix?
I don't know. And I asked that question last night. I said, is Mueller? Because last week, okay, a few days ago, I asked, look, Kyle Wright's pitching better. The numbers are better. Is he in the discussion? And when Snit kind of, he's been in the discussion, but, you know, not much more than just in the discussion. Kind of made it clear that he wasn't the guy. So I followed that last night with Kyle Mueller, and he said, I haven't heard his name mentioned, basically, you know, but I don't understand that because Kyle pitched pretty well, I thought.
Where did you think he pitched well?
Mueller. I thought it.
Oh, Mueller pitched.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Come on. Mueller pitched pretty well there. What was that? At the end of June, we're in Cincinnati and New York, and you know,
he just had some weird things going on where the ball would just that way, or and then he started throwing all sliders. That's not a good sign if you can't throw your fastball, command your fastball.
Yeah.
So that was something weird, and nobody ever talked about it, and we never saw him again. So something happened.
Yeah.
But we don't really know what.
He's got a 1.86 over his last five starts at Gwinnett.
Okay, so he's been down there pitching.
So that's why.
But sometimes you can get away with, you know, three different breaking balls down there and not throw your fastball.
Yeah.
And you can't do those things up here. And just like Pache was down there, and he was batting over 300, but you don't talk about them bringing him up.
Right.
You know, and Newcomb would go down there and, you know, dominate. But they're not talking about putting him in the rotation. It is kind of strange, and it is a little bit of a predicament because they don't trust any of those guys.
Yeah.
I don't think they trust Smyly. You know, especially if his, you know, it was tough enough with his velocity up that he was kind of, you know, doing enough.
Yeah.
And then you thought Tukey was going to break through, but now he's reverting back to some of his old strategies and getting behind everybody. So now they don't trust him. Mm-hmm. And then with Mueller, I mean, you would think that as well as he pitched, like you said, in July, and then he goes down there and he's been pitching well, he would definitely be in the discussion, but something's happened there. So,
yeah.
I don't know. You're gonna need that guy down the stretch. Hopefully we don't, but even so, when you get nowadays they're gonna be pitching.
Yeah. I mean that fifth spot in your rotation, you want to get some stability in it. You hope to get, you know, enough in it or a value that you win that game that day, but you definitely don't want to make sure you're not putting somebody out there that's gonna burn that bullpen and affect you that next game.
Well, we know that nobody is going to pitch and then come back early. That those days are over with, right? I mean, there's the Scherzers of the world that might do that. Nobody else is doing that. So you are definitely dependent upon that fifth guy, whether it's in the down the stretch, first round, second round, third round, you're going to use them.
Yeah.
And you gotta have somebody out there that's going to give you more than three innings.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and right now, I don't think they believe that what they have right now can do that.
Yeah.
And I mean, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would just try to be creative and make them one. Like piggyback them.
Yeah.
And I don't see
call the Rays.
Yeah.
Call the Rays and ask them.
Yeah. Exactly. They figured it out. I think they just have some kind of cloning machine. They put a different name on the back of jerseys or something.
Every time I watch them, I'm like, I don't know that this is actually a real guy. It's just some monster out there throwing a 99. Really quick. Well, while we're talking rotation, so I'm going to go ahead and tempt fate here and assume that we're going to make the postseason. We don't want any 10-year celebrations of the 2011 team and what happened there. That one still haunts me a little bit. So, but let's assume that the Braves do go ahead and clinch the East and make it to the postseason. So I'll ask each of you, what would your rotation be? And Greg, we'll start with you. What would your rotation be, you think, for the postseason this year? How would you order it?
Oh, I mean, you've got to start with Charlie. Mm-hmm. And veteran guy, been there. And then you go to Max, right? And then I'm going to Waskar. So those are my three guys. And then if it gets to that fourth one, you know, it's just...
That's probably a bullpen day, or you piece that one together kind of like we saw last year.
Yeah, okay. But, I mean, those three guys give you a great chance to win that first round. And if it gets down to where it's 2-2, you know, then I've got a – it's all hands on deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's obvious the first two. You definitely go Charlie and then Max. I'm going to let these next couple of weeks influence whether I put Huascar or Ian in that third spot. Just – I want – you know, all things being equal, Oscar's great down the stretch. It's his. I want that that arm. That's who I want. But if he, you know, teeters here over the next couple of weeks, I know that Ian had some success in the postseason last year. He's at least been introduced to that scene.
Sure.
So I'm comfortable putting him there. But a division series, my optimal rotation is the same as Greg's. I want Oscar.
And Ian's got to start. It's just that he may only go two innings. And then I'm going to go, you know, two ends with somebody else. But, I mean, I'm going to give Ian every chance because I think he could, even if he gives that glimmer that he's going to go five, six, seven innings over these next 3 weeks, you know, he's going to be the guy because of that very fact that he, you know, he's got the ability, he's got the experience, and he's got the temperament, and he's going to challenge guys. He just has gone through a little bit of rough patch, and then his season's been kind of crazy with getting hurt. So I think he's the guy long term.
Yeah.
I just hope that he puts it together. I've just been through an injury in the middle of the season, and it does throw you off a little bit. I just don't know if this last part of the year is going to give him enough time to see a lot of consistency out of him. I hope it happens because he's got two really good pitches that could allow it, just like Waskar does.
Yeah.
So I hope he's got, but he's going to be my fourth starter no matter what. Now, whether or not how long he goes, I don't know, but he's got to start for you because he's gives you the better chance of anybody else that we have.
You know, and that's the thing. If you with Ian, the encouraging thing was that Sunday or whatever, the last time he pitched Saturday or Sunday, you saw nine strikeouts. Mm-hmm. You know, we hadn't seen any strikeouts the two previous starts. So you hope that that's trending in the right direction, you know. And boy, it's nice to have a guy like Ian available. We're in 2019, and you know we can dissect. You know, Soroka should have started game one anyhow. But when you get yourself in a hole, or not in a hole, they weren't in a hole, but you put yourself in a position where you're bringing Keiko back on short rest. I think if you have an Ian pitching the way he is, that's a much more comfortable.
Right.
Here you are, you're up 2-1. Put Ian out there instead of Keiko.
Yeah,
yeah. I think there's a lot of lessons we could do that a different time. But you go back and dissect how that everybody was lined up for the 2019 first series. And there's a lot to be taken away from that.
No doubt.
Okay, well, last question then. We'll let you go enjoy your belated birthday celebration and start going over the matchups.
What did you do
Saturday
for your birthday?
I sat here and watched baseball. I sat in the dentist chair for 2 hours.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Even better.
Yeah.
Well, we still got a couple weeks to see how it all plays out, but your postseason roster, I'm kind of curious. I'm always so curious to see how a postseason roster is made out and who makes it and who doesn't. Who would you carry on the bench? Would you carry three catchers? As of right now, and again, we still got a couple weeks here, but how do you think you would hammer that out?
You know, I might have the three catcher thing. I may have thought more seriously about if Vogt had stayed healthy, and I needed thought there. I don't think I carry three catchers this time.
I agree.
You know, I think that, to be honest with you, it's not going to, that roster is not going to change a whole lot for me from where it is right now. I mean, I don't think, you know, there's a spot for Camargo or anything. If you wanted to somebody to run, you know, or something like that, if you, I don't want to bring Pache up just to run. If I don't know if I've changed it too much. And I'll be honest with you, Ricky, I haven't thought much about this one. You're way ahead of me on the postseason.
I know. I literally first started thinking about it this morning. It was the first time I really kind of started thinking, well, you know, the three catchers. But it seems like they traditionally carry three catchers, but this will be the year where I really don't think you would do that at all.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one there because, I don't know, I mean, if you had an arm, I mean, I'll tell you what, one thing was really encouraging was Newcomb, you know, outing last night to get, what was that, four strikeouts? That's encouraging to know that you might be able to put that in your bullpen.
Right.
You know. And I think Martin threw a rehab start or rehab game last night, so that's good.
Yeah.
You know, and he struggled. You know, I feel like he struggled this year to be back to where I thought he would be, you know, when we originally saw him the first part of the year last year. And so I don't know what's different. When I look at him, the only thing that's different, he's not hitting the same type of spots. His stuff is not dynamic enough to be able to miss where he's missing. And his whole MO and why he was so successful is he did not miss. He would be out there on the black and he would stay there and he would go in, he would go up and he'd go down. And that's what made him so good. He did not miss over the plate. But I've just seen that more and more this year. And I don't know, he's been in and out of the IL a little bit. And so he's dealing with something. Of course, you know, he's getting older and he's got logged a lot of appearances. But yeah, he can be, I mean, he's a very good reliever for us, but he's got to hit his spots. And we've seen him get hurt, you know.
I saw,
like anybody.
I'd say there were points last year, and you know, where I felt like Chris Martin was about as good as anybody, you know, and maybe even just some parts of this year. And like I said, that's everybody across the league had to make some adjustments. And I'm not saying, you know, Martin's still maybe trying to make those adjustments, but when the rules or the landscape changed there in the middle of the season, what Tyler Matzik was able to do, what Luke Jackson was able to do, you know, in the middle of the season, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, Chris is still trying to do that himself, but he was about as good as anybody, you know, at times last year.
Agreed.
Well, Bo, we thank you for your time. I already gave you that Maryland pick, so that's a lock.
I'll get
you the rest of Rick's picks come Saturday morning before kickoff.
Give me Rick's picks, yeah.
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 Rick's picks are in the text chain. Rick's picks are still, again, for entertainment purposes only, we still have a winning record with Rick's picks, but just barely after last weekend.
Yeah,
last weekend didn't help.
Yeah, when Rich Rodriguez gave up that homer the other day, I reminded Rick that Rick's picks were about as good as Rich's pitches.
All right. On that note. Thanks as always, Bo.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Hey, Braves country. We just wanted to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe Behind the Braves on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or at braves.com/behindthebraves, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on Behind the Braves.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.